Sorry.
More like a lot longer. Oh, that was you. No, I figure I had at least 120 hours in last week, and I'll pay for it.
I got lucky. I had some sinus thing going on, so I really actually couldn't do much productive on Saturday.
You had a sinus thing going on?
Yeah, I did. Okay. It was ugly.
It looked like somebody socked him in the left eye.
You should see the other guy.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Return to sender.
Welcome to Stamp Show here today. We're recording part two of Orko Expo 2015. I'm sitting here with Cash, Tom, Jeff, Steve, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. So let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about Orko Expo 2015 updates, hashtag Stamp Stories 2015, and our expert topic this week is airmails. So updates, we're going to talk about post Orko Expo. So how did it go this year?
Well, how did it do on Sunday? Because we had a storm on Sunday.
And that was a pain.
That was.
Although attendance was down this year, probably about 30% due to three factors. One being the economy, two, the APS convention next month, and three, our inclement weather raining 2 days heavily really kept people away.
Yeah, but on Sunday, it was Jim Dempsey, who always has his chairs full, had half his chairs empty for half a Sunday.
And that's not normal.
No, not at all.
So there's things we can't control. However, the weather did break at closing time, so yeah, the dealers were able to get their material out to their vehicles safely, and yeah, that was a big concern. Also, I spoke with Dempsey, and he still did the number that he was hoping and expecting to do, so things were on track economically.
Oh, I think all the dealers were very happy. I think that there was a lot of money spent.
I would say most. I didn't hear of any big, large single-item transactions. However, there were a lot of activity.
I heard the auction did really good on Sunday. Wayne Youngblood said they brought in a lot of funds, and I think it's because people say, oh, bad weather, no one's going to be there, I'm going to go.
No, that floor was almost full. The auction room, almost every seat was taken. And okay, David Coles did report that they had an excellent spending or income.
What about the update on the return of the stamp collection?
Oh, that's interesting. We did mention that there was a theft at the prior show, and that we had a couple perps detained, and it turned out that a Korean officer got through to the Korean father and team, I'd say, and they spoke with their son at home, and he sent pictures to the officer of the collection. And the conclusion was, yesterday I called the victim, and he said he went to the Anaheim Police Department yesterday and identified his collection. It was intact, and they returned it to him, which is a victory for all, because this rarely does the police ever have a completion or return of stolen property to the original owner. In this case, it was material of Japanese occupation, German occupation of Asia, and years and years of assembling this area. And the victim was very, very happy to get its return. So it was a victory.
Well, if they tried to sell it anywhere, it would be readily recognized also. That was a pretty cool collection.
It was. I did see it a month or two prior walking by, and I usually comment on customers' collections when I see them and I see something of interest. And most of it was used, which makes it even more interesting to me, because used is much more difficult to acquire than mint. Anyone can buy a mint stamp, but something that has gone through the mail and served its purpose and has an unusual cancel or postmark is far more interesting, especially to a small or limited provisional government or occupied area.
Yeah, maybe we should just go over how was it stolen so that people can avoid this, because not saying that the person who lost it was foolish.
Not at all.
But you need to, when you bring something like that to a show, you kind of need to watch it. You need to make sure that it's with you.
Well, most customers or most people are trustworthy and honest people, including the dealers. And this gentleman collector had set his book on the front table of a dealer and walked around the corner or the side of the booth, and the next thing you know, the book was gone. So, yes, he left it unattended, however, not suspecting anyone would take his personal belongings.
Well, they never do.
They never do. This is what I'm saying. Anyway, the booth was only about 10 feet from the front door of the show, thus allowing a quick and easy escape route. Yet we had three witnesses, and that's what made it also recoverable. We had three witnesses, and also the collector had a detailed description of his collection, which I always recommend that either have a description or photograph your materials so that you have a record, either bring the photocopies to the shows or when you're shopping so you have something to compare to. Leave the originals at home. But for identification purposes, or if your collection is ever stolen, God help you, the officers have something to go by. And if you don't, well, it's almost impossible to get things back. We also had email blasts from APS and ASDA alerting the public nationwide of this material that was stolen. So you have to do your due diligence in trying to get it returned. You have to file a police report. And if you don't, you're not going to get the material back, even if it's identifiable. The police have to have documentation, in which case this was very documented and was easily returned. And we had, again, a victory of the material being returned to the collector. Hooray!
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, not too much. I don't hear very much stuff getting stolen. And when you do, you always wonder, you know, did it get recovered? And I really like the fact that we have this story from start to finish where, you know, it got stolen, it got recovered, it got back to the person, and let's all learn a little bit of a lesson.
Absolutely.
Don't walk away from your stuff.
Yeah, learn by somebody else's mistake.
Yeah, don't walk away. Keep an attendance or an eye on what you have. Make photocopies or good detailed records of if it's a specialized collection. And even if it's common material, make photographs or copies and bring that to the shows or when you're out shopping rather than the actual collection.
Yeah, because if the police do find it and you don't know everything that was in it, they're going to say, how do we know it's yours?
Exactly.
Yeah,
maybe we recovered somebody else's stuff.
Another reason for certification authentication is its photo record. You have a certificate of authenticity, and every stamp has its own fingerprint per se. The perforations are going to be different than other stamps, color, centering, and again, that's great for recovery purposes is having certification or authentication.
Yeah, if my stuff was stolen, I'd have to tell the police it's an old blue album with old U.S. stamps in
You and 10,000 other people.
The cover's kind of, you know, faded a little bit.
It weighs 5 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a topical collection like me, bananas on stamps, or a purple collection like I do, then that would be maybe a little easier to recover. Or my Peter Max artwork collection, because not too many people collect the topics I do.
So hold on. Back up a little bit. Bananas on stamps?
Bananas on stamps.
How big is your collection?
I have 5 volumes.
Five volumes?
You're serious? A banana stamp?
A banana stamps, covers, postcards, the whole nine yards. And thus, that's my email. People always ask, well, what are you collecting? And I said, well, number one, I collect bananas. Thus, I'm the number one banana collector. And so when I go to a major stamp show, I go, hi, I'm Stephen Patillo. Oh, you're number one banana. They recognize me by that, my email versus my name.
That's funny.
Okay, got to ask, sorry. Go. What is the most interesting thing in your collection?
I would say I have advertising covers from the turn of the century that actually advertise red bananas, illustrated red bananas on the covers. And the second thing, which a Kim Choi, a friend and specialist in China, 20 years ago, gave me, going out to dinner, gave me a postcard from Belgian Congo. It had a postmark on it from the city of Bananas, 1889. And that's my frontispiece, or my title page, an item from 1889 from the city of Bananas. So I have fun collections.
So I have to ask, what inspired collecting banana stamps?
Thank you. To me, the stuffy old judges from Sescal and a few other exhibits were my inspiration to create a fun collection to spoof them and to win the most popular exhibit award, instead of going for the grand, which has so much detailed criteria to go by, and you have to have rare and expensive things. So I want to win the most popular exhibit award. So my collection is titled "We've Gone Bananas," and the motto is "A Collection with Appeal."
Oh my gosh.
That wins as far as puns.
Exactly. See, the thing is
you get the award.
See, I figure if people look at my exhibit and see all the fun things I have, and including Australia issued bananas and pajamas. I have stamps with the cartoon characters, my red banana covers and all the different things I have. You look at it, but you'll read my punchline and you're going to laugh and you're going to vote for me and I win. Hands down, I'm going to win the most popular exhibit award because you laughed. And that's what stamp collecting is all about. Have fun and enjoy. Collect what you want to collect. Have fun with it. Don't worry about filling in the rarest of stamp and being, well, I'll never get it. Get what you can. Have fun. Collect strictly for fun. And
what
is
the rarest banana stamp?
I don't. The one I don't have. I don't know. You know, but people give me banana stamps every time I go to the stamp show. Someone will walk over and say, "Do you have these? Do you have these?" And it's like, and most of the time I do, and sometimes I don't. They're interesting.
Do you have the U.S. number one with Benjamin Franklin eating the banana?
No, but
it's
I have the PRC monkey eating a banana.
That would be an interesting banana stamp.
It would.
So did anyone's wares catch your attention at the show?
Other than the perps? I'll be quite honest. Daniel Kaufman. Let's see, who else? Kit Brown. These are females that I like.
Kit's so nice, too. I always go to her table at least once at a show when she's there.
Yes. Well, Kit helped me complete Orco Expo with the computer work in December and January, and while she was gone on her trip. So she was integral in and also the production of the program. She's on board to help with Orco Expo this next year as well. So I look forward. She and I have almost the same exact OCDs, and we like to be professional, and we're detail-oriented and to the point of being very anal. But that's what gets things done and makes things good, is that we seek to be professional and are detailed oriented.
What did you guys buy? Who bought what?
I got I way overspent. I got a group of U.S. number 10s from Plate One Early, which is a rare plate.
That's something we understand.
I got a bunch of 3-cent stamps that I way overpaid for, and a bunch of newspaper stamps with hand cancels instead of pen cancels and stuff like that.
And you also got a sheet of color variety.
And I got a sheet of 1290 magenta.
Magenta. Ooh, magenta.
Oh, I know.
Which we had a discussion a couple episodes ago.
We did.
Did you find them, or were they labeled correctly?
No, everything was labeled correctly.
So you had to pay the full price for that.
I paid big bucks.
That's what he's lamenting about. Yeah, but you're happy to get them nevertheless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I went out and got a block, so you had to go get a sheet. I see how it is.
You found a block before at the show?
No, the ones that I showed you before.
Oh, yes, the plate block. Yeah, but you did very well by finding that plate block.
What'd you pay for the plate block?
$60.
$60.
A bargain. Yeah. Okay. Something worth $150.
Yep. Well, I want to know how much my plate block is worth now.
$150. Yep. Bucks.
But I know I can sell it for $60.
This was better centered, though.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Well, it's not just that, but we're going to put ours in for grading. Once it's graded and it's dead set in cement what it is, that it is the correct variety, you know, then it'll get a better price. So
there you go.
Well, it'll become an auction lot if you do that.
Yes. Yeah? Hmm. I'll bid $50 on it.
That'd be fun. Oh, boy.
That's what I was asked. I was asked if I was going to break it up. And I really don't know. I mean, it's a sheet. It's
try to sell it as a sheet first, and if nothing happens, then break it up.
Yeah, because if I break it up, then I'll have
a lot of singles.
Well, samples that go in my collection and disappear forever, too.
The hole.
Yep, exactly.
Oh, like this mic, the black hole.
Let's see.
I know what Tom bought.
Yep. What did you get, Tom?
I just bought the new Micarelli book, the 6th edition.
Oh, very good.
The one
good.
That's got all the color photos. I only had a copy of the old black and white.
So. And it's a cool book.
It's a really cool book.
This should be a good commercial for that book.
On that note, I was wondering what I bought other than stamps for stock. I did buy 10 number ones, but I bought the new edition of the Error catalog, which is in color, has been in color, but it's now spiral bound and much more user friendly. And so that I like to add reference books to my library.
Spiral bound is cool. I would actually say that's probably my only complaint about the new Micarelli style is its soft cover. So
not user friendly.
It's not as user friendly, especially if you're trying to look stuff up.
You know,
but having color photos as opposed to the black and white drawings is really awesome.
I opened a cabinet at home the other day, and I actually have a spiral binding machine.
Huh?
Huh?
I should bring it down here and let you guys use it because then I would know where it's at.
No,
I've never used it. I just bought it. It was on sale.
I also got something from one of the dealers for the. Helping identify the Hawaiian numeral stamps, the large Batinums.
The little green notebook thing? I have that book too?
No, it's big. It's not the Westerberg catalog.
Oh. Ooh,
it's actually, it's a large, it's, well, I printed it out because they forward it to me in email. But it is, I don't know who made it, but it's the large Batinums. So it's got all
What's
of
Batinums?
The Batinums? Batinums are what they consider the actual, the large numeral on the Hawaiian numerals.
As opposed to?
They called them Batinums. The guy who originally started plating, I guess the Hawaiians started calling them Batinums, and that's the numeral in the middle.
Batman, well, we're going to discuss that later.
Okay.
That's our main thing. We've got a whole thing on Batinum and Robin, I think it is.
I was going to say you have to correspond that. That'll be the cross reference subject: Batinums and Batmans.
But between the two things, between that book and the Westerberg, you can actually helps you identify Hawaiian numerals and plate them like in like 10 minutes.
You should also include Batum in there as the form part of the conversation.
Batum Batums.
Now we're getting off topic.
Holy Batum Batums, Batman!
But hold on, you also did get 4 stamps.
I got 3 blocks.
Excuse me, 3 blocks.
I got 3 blocks. I went to the UN post office booth,
okay.
And I bought the 2014 definitives for this year for the UN. They're doing endangered animals every year.
Yes.
And this year, all 3 blocks all 3 releases from the 3 offices were endangered marine animals.
Interesting.
My daughter loves that stuff, so I bought a block of 4, one from each office.
Was she happy with Daddy?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, the Swiss office, I think it is, they're the ones who totally have all their deep sea fish extinct, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, because it's the Alps.
Here we go again. add that to the corrections for next week.
guess I walked into that one.
Yes, you did.
Now, did you get the pre-release of the personalized sheet that Ron had a week before they were released?
No, I was busy working. I didn't walk around the show much.
Well, they were UN sheets, but he had the sheet that comes out next week at the show for sale early.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, I heard him saying some about that. Yeah. That's what he was talking about.
Didn't tell me that
one. You can have an early known use.
Because he really didn't want to sell them. He wanted to keep them for himself.
Yeah. Jessica, what did you get? I know you got something.
Well, someone had a quite complete catalog of Disney stamps.
Oh, you found it?
So, well, not the catalog, just...
a collection.
A collection.
Was that Edemic?
I don't know.
Over by... across from Kid and my father?
Oh, the guy that does topicals.
Yeah, that's endemic.
Yeah.
All the books, Little Red Room, all the different. So you, what do you mean by you bought like a complete collection?
No, well, no, I wanted to.
Oh, you did. Yeah.
I didn't
She was forced to pick and choose.
I had to pick the Little Mermaids out.
I mean,
and move on,
I purchased a 27-volume collection once.
Of Disney?
Yeah, there's a lot of material out there.
Wow, that's five times that's 5 times more than bananas.
You're on the road.
It is.
I bought a little, 2 Little Mermaid sheets and a Pocahontas sheetlet that wasn't Pocahontas. It was like the ducks dressed up like Indians, but it also had Colombians in the background. It was for Ameripex way back when.
Oh, yeah,
Ameripex
little teeny 86, tiny yeah. centimeter wide. Yeah, I'll hold that up to the microphone. Centimeter centimeter wide Colombians. Pictures of Colombians on this Disney sheet. It was really weird.
There were so many things issued back in Ameripex. Never really saw them. Still seeing things that came out 38 years ago, 39 years ago. No, 29 years ago.
Well, it kind of legitimizes my Disney obsession by having Colombians on this stamp. So.
Let's see. I got an E5 used for a couple of dollars that I'm going to get graded. I came across a cheap mint, never hinged. I don't even know what makes it an A. They were calling it a C67A. I don't know if
that's
it's a tagging. Tagging variety.
A mint one or a used one?
Mint.
Okay. So it should fluoresce orange.
So, okay. Ooh, that'll be fun to play with.
Yes. They're difficult and undervalued. So a single's
really?
Got like $450.
Well,
well
I might have to go
pin.
Back to A to Z stamps then and
buy the rest.
Hopefully it wasn't switched in the wrong spot.
No, they had them specifically. I'll give them credit for that because, yes, they visually, they look identical. The way they kept them separated is the regular C67s were by themselves in the stock book and the 67As were in individual little cellophane packets in the stock book.
And I do things
the
like that too
book.
For my stock, yes.
So that you can't swap them easily.
Correct. They don't get contained. Contaminated or cross-filed.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Didn't you say you had trouble finding airmails at this show?
Oh, yeah. Finding well-centered airmails. They're drying up.
Well, grading is, you know,
taking
one
off.
Of the largest growing aspects of stamp collecting. Everybody wants the really nice stuff.
And anybody can do it. Learn the parameters of grading, and you can, too, win economically on it.
Yeah. I mean, Lloyd bought a Q2? I think
That was online, though.
Yeah, he bought it online on eBay.
Q9.
No, not that one. The one before that went into auction.
I didn't see that one.
He bought a Q2, and I think he paid double catalog for
totally
it.
Totally
like $3 or something like that.
Oh, that he can afford.
And he sold it either at auction or private treaty. I'm not sure which, but he got like $950 for it.
Oh, dear Lord.
He got a 100J. It's the finest one known.
You pay rent with that kind of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I specifically try to find dealers that are at these larger shows like this one that are from out of state that I don't see at the small shows.
Yeah.
To try to find some of their stuff. So that's where I went. I went to Stamps and Stuff and found a few good things digging through his stuff. There was somebody there that collected mice on stamps.
Mice.
And
Ratatouille.
He dug through all of Stamps and Stuff's sheets. It took 3 hours. And he purchased an inch thick stack of Disney sheets of the Disney Friends with Mickey and Minnie on it.
That makes sense.
Because this person was going to make first day covers, which led me to ask. He said he has 5,000 or 6,000 uncacheted modern first day covers. So I asked him if he had any of the chicken stamp, and he said he would look, and if he did, he'd bring them to Riverside.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
So
thank you.
tell the story that he told you about why he has so many covers.
Oh my gosh. I wish I could remember the name of the artist, but we got into it about why he's so into covers, because that's a lot of covers. He said he, 40 or 50 years ago, he met this guy who was a little bit of a hippie that painted rocks for a living. And was pretty good at it. So he said, hey, I like your art. How about you you come over and you paint some envelopes with stamps on them for me? And we'll see what happens. So they started doing that. He paid him 50 cents a piece. And then whatever the actual cover cost, he turned around and sold them for $1 a piece.
Wow, cheap.
Years later.
Back then it was a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
10 years later, this guy's covers were so famous, he got so well known for it that they went for $100 a pop.
You don't remember?
I don't remember the artist's name. I'll have to ask him at the next show. Well, he said it was really sad because a couple of years ago he lost his friend at the age of 90-something, late 90s. But he said when his friend died, his friend's wife called him and said, I have something I need to send you. It's really special. I can't tell you what it is. You just have to see it. So she boxed it up. She sent it to him. He said what it was this big artist easel that had 20 covers in a 4x5 grid affixed to it. And what he would do is he would airbrush. No, it wasn't airbrush. He was doing it by hand, but it was similar to airbrush. He would put all of the clouds on all at once on all these covers. And that was the first thing that he put on. And he said it was really weird because it had this big slash of paint through it. So he called her up and said, what is this? This is really strange. Why did you send me this? These are all messed up and damaged. She said he died making those covers.
Oh.
And that was his last brush stroke he ever made.
Final stroke.
Oh.
And I was just like, oh. Oh, my God. So he got it framed, and it's hanging up in his living room. Yeah. Just like, oh, that's crazy.
Just give me resounding goosebumps all over.
Oh, yeah, I know. Wow. He died doing what he loved.
Literally.
Yeah.
That brings up back to A&D, Jim Dempsey. People ask when he's going to retire. He's 84 years old. He's a dynamo, like a 40-year-old that's on steroids. And he says, I quit. I'll retire at my eulogy.
He's a good guy. I like him.
He also has a little button a little pinback button. It says 1001 Club. And what does that mean? Well, at 1001, they're all at my table. And I thought about that, a couple years ago when I first saw that button. I said, oh, I got to get a different one. What? I said, mine's 959 Club. Oh. Why? Because they're all at the front door waiting to get to your table.
That's great. So, any other Orko Expo stories?
I'm sure there's plenty.
Well, there's all the ones we don't know about. I know.
Met a bunch of guys at the table who were nice. Great people out there.
Yeah.
Lots of people came by, asked us about stamps. You know, can we identify this for them? Helped out a lot of people like that. Sold a bunch of Book of Secrets. That was nice.
Yeah. We also had represented at the front registration area the Orange Senior Citizens Stamp Club. We had Orange County Philatelic Society. We had Long Beach Philatelic Society or Stamp Club. We also had representation from the Simi Valley, the Thousand Oaks, and the Goebel up in the valley, and the Ventura Stamp Club. So
and
we
all brought candy and cookies.
Oh, and I missed out. I didn't get any of them.
Huge, wow. That was like a huge chocolate buffet out there with them.
That was my candy box, not their candy box.
No. They brought a bunch of candy.
And nobody told me.
Yep, you lost out.
When was that? I totally lost that one.
Yeah.
My friend Gordon from PCGS brought me my cookie bribe, which he normally does to every show.
And where was my apple fritter bribe?
I don't get donuts for our collects, but
oh, okay.
You're on your own, buddy.
I brought donuts last year.
Oh, yeah.
So that dealers will remember me later when I came to their table and asked for stamps.
Oh. No wonder why you didn't come and ask me for stamps. Yeah, you must have ran out of donuts.
She always gets the 2-donut discount.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and just totally off the subject, but I thought it was interesting. There were a couple people there who had the circus sheets.
Yes, I did too.
And they were selling between $5 and $8.
For the one off the press sheet.
For the one off the press sheet. And I know you had you sold 2 for $100. I saw Jim Dempsey had 1 for $75.
Oh, I would have thought about it, maybe.
So, those are shipping up to be expensive. So anybody who's listening to this, $65 out of the fulfillment center, you better grab them while they last.
If they're still available. I just received my 12 that I ordered yesterday.
Well, so, I've got 8 right there.
Okay.
Wow.
They're limited, and I recommend people get them before the album supplements start coming out between March and May, because game on.
Yeah.
And depending on whether they include it in that album supplement or not, or whether Scott Catalog lists it or doesn't list it, which can be another topic of listing and delisting in our viewpoints. But, if it's issued by the post office, whether it was for general consumption or mail purposes or not, being a circus item, it's multi-topic, it's beautiful. I recommend getting one. It's kind of like Legends of the West or the special die-cut Bugs in Perf. They're limited. There's few of them out there. And it's the new hot item.
So, was this the first time you guys had societies meeting in a room at the show?
No.
The Japanese Society?
At the end of, on Sunday, we had the Japanese Philatelic Society. They were there at 3 o'clock. The auction house has first right of all time schedules in the meeting room. And luckily for PSE and the podcast, Friday was totally available. And then at the end of the show, we had the Japanese Philatelic Society. In the future, we may be moving Orco Expo this next year. I hope to find a new location, and my goal is the Hilton Costa Mesa, where the H.R. Harmer conducts its sale. It's logical because there's three freeways right there within less than a mile, and Orange County Airport. So it's a logical location. Plus, there's plenty of meeting space so I can expand the show and not only offer more clubs and to have meetings, but to have an exhibit as well, which I haven't really been able to do yet.
But will they have free drinks and breakfast?
You're on your own.
Who got free drinks?
Does it really matter?
I got like
two small
plastic bottles of water and some cookies, which, well, again, I appreciate. I really liked them. But
you got cookies, too?
Yeah, I got a little chocolate chip cookie bag.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
That was from my green bag.
Yes.
That's from my bag of goodies.
Yeah, I was lucky, I guess.
That was a Steve thing, not a hotel thing.
That's a Steve thing.
Yeah, the hotel thing, if you had a key card... they had a free, and it's hotel wide. It wasn't just for the show.
Yeah.
A free happy hour, 5:30 to 7:30.
Yes.
So all the dealers piled up outside
Sneak
in the
drink.
Center area, and they were, you know, having a blast.
On one card.
One card, eight dealers.
They don't care. They must have tipped.
No. Yeah. So, and then there was a really nice breakfast the next morning. So, and which I learned this year, that a lot of dealers made breakfast and lunch out of that breakfast. They had plates of food kind of under the table that would magically appear right around lunchtime.
Interesting. And I do recommend the omelets over the buffet.
This is true.
I had free Carl's Jr. coupons.
Mm.
Ah.
Boy, didn't expect that to crash the conversation.
No.
two minute lull in conversation. Yeah.
When I'm editing, that's forever.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, shall we move on to Cash's corrections?
Yeah, I have a correction to make, and I don't have my sound effect.
What else is new?
Yeah.
That's a correction.
I commented on Wilt Chamberlain doing everything for the Lakers, and I didn't think that he did that much for the Philadelphia. And I was criticizing that they had his Philadelphia uniform so prominent on the sheet of stamps that they made. Turns out, of course, I was wrong. He probably got 2/3 of his records while he was with Philadelphia 76ers. And then when he went to the Lakers, I guess the only records he was breaking were bedroom ones.
Oh, boy.
Okay, I wanted to bring up that our website, www.stamshowhereday.com, has been upgraded. So we now have a blog where I post show notes, videos, pictures, contact information for guests, that kind of thing. You can now leave your questions and comments on a Google Voice answering machine anytime. No one's going to actually pick up the phone. It's just a machine. At the phone number 949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice, so you can make the call from your computer. You don't have to pick up a phone.
You know, I hear various podcasts, and they play the recordings of people like when they're drunk calling up.
Maybe
if we got
drunk stamp questions,
that would be interesting.
So we lick them or do we stick them?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. He's
the better question is in which order.
Do I still have to lick it?
Yeah.
I tried these stamps, but I can't use that joke.
Oh, no. Well, we did have somebody say we needed more jokes. I mean,
well, this one's a political one, and I can't.
Oh, the Obama one?
What?
The Obama one?
Oh. What?
Yeah, see, there's jokes everywhere just waiting to come out of the woodwork.
I will never admit to that.
I have a clean joke.
Oh, no.
No, it's not a joke.
Two muffins are in an oven, and the one muffin turns to the other one and says, "Man, it's getting hot in here." And the other muffin says, "Holy crap, a talking muffin."
Edit time.
I was going to say we have sound effects now. I was going to say, where are the crickets?
Okay, as far as listener questions go, I'd like to give a shout out to Top Hat Stamps.
Yay!
Who suggested we add to our pen pal list a really fun postcard exchange. Their website is www.postcrossing.com. And in a second comment, they said, ready to sign up for the hashtag chicken stamp study group at Stamp Show HT. It's a great podcast for stampers. So thank you for that shout out. They also included a link to a Pinterest site that's run by someone named Brett Morris, a U.S. stamp enthusiast, for his fun U.S. stamps collection, which led me to a picture of a chicken stamp. So there are other enthusiasts out there. I can now count them on one hand.
Oh, no. But you maybe, can count them on more than one finger.
Yeah, more than one finger. Maybe we'll move that to two hands later. So I want to bring you a little interesting tidbit of stamp stories. It actually involves Batman and a cool piece of conjecture. I think the new Batman stamp could have influenced radio personality, voiceover actor, and recent comic book writer Ralph Garman's final chapter of Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet new comic book series. As part of the first day issue ceremony hosted by the comic book writer, radio actor, personality, the 8 commemorative Batman designs were revealed depicting Batman from the 4 distinct eras of comic book history to include various incarnations of the famed Bat emblem. This could have very well influenced his latest installment of his comic book series. Here is a clip from the podcast Hollywood Babylon Comic-Con Theater, hosted by Garman and his friend Kevin Smith. The clip is from a live reading and the most recent issue. Take a listen and you decide.
A danger from above threatens the good people of Gotham City. But does even their Cape Defender have the skill to shoot a falling bomb out of the sky? Here it comes, Batman! Roger that, Hornet. Firing bazooka in 3, 2... Wait, Batman, hold your fire! The bomb just deployed a parachute. It looks like it's coming in for a landing.
There we go. Right.
I was lost for a second. So the missile is floating to the ground with a parachute attached to it that says boom.
Well, that's weird. Who drops a bomb just to have it gently set down without exploding? I can think of only one person who would play such a sinister joke.
Do you think it's a twisted message from Gum and the Joker, Batman?
There's only one way to find out, Robin. We need to approach it and investigate further. Everyone, stay behind the bat shield.
And Batman is holding up the bat shield, which is not going to stop shit.
Hey, hey! That's made from a special space-age polymer.
Maybe it leaves like a fresh-looking corpse, but they're all going.
You don't know, man.
Suddenly, Kato screams,
"Look out! The nose cone is opening!"
Suppository Kato. And the nose cone opens up and out pops a bunch of pieces of paper.
Paper.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. Sounded like somebody jerked.
To you, everything sounds like somebody
Holy confetti, Batman!
Not confetti, Robin. Postage stamps. Hundreds of them. And not just any stamps. Italian postage stamps, don't you know?
Nothing remark about these. Let me try that again.
Yeah. Hold on, man. Let's take a
sip.
You all right there? You need anything?
Wet my whistle. I'm good.
Fluffer, anything? You all good? Yep. All right, here we go. The diva's ready to go, kids. Action.
Nothing remarkable about these at first glance. Of course, we'll know more when we further examine a sample in the Bat Cave.
The Bat Cave?
Yeah, just wait till you see this place.
Of course, they do have to knock us out to take us there.
Of course.
What? Where did Connery come from? I get for doing this sober.
A brief appearance. All right, let's do it again. And take two and action.
Of course they do have to knock us out to take us there.
Of course. Well then, I guess I'll see you when we wake up.
A short time later, in the secret Batcave, a revived Green Hornet and Kato join the Cape Crusaders as they put their new clues through every imaginable scientific test.
Deep in the Batcave, we see the Batmobile and the Black Beauty side by side as Batman, Robin, and Green Hornet. And Kato study the Bat computer.
Well, the that's green. It.
The copyright green. Kevin Ralph.
Our next book.
That's our future, the green. Dude, there. People will pay to see that movie. I think.
Well, that's it. Even the Bat spectrographic analyzer shows these stamps are nothing more than ink, paper, and ordinary adhesive.
That's what an iPad sounded like in the 60s, folks.
Gosh, Batman, maybe the clue isn't in the stamps themselves. Maybe they symbolize something else.
That's good thinking, Robin. Let's consider the recurring themes of this caper so far. For example, there's gum super glue.
Well, there's the stamps, of course. Stamped fossils, stamped coins, pasta stamps.
And Italy, Roman gods, the Italian pavilion.
And one Italian in particular, Franco Bolo.
Came to watch a man talk to himself, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it! Of course. I was a fool to miss it. Well done, Hornet.
Huh?
Sorry, boss. I think we still don't get it.
We've been thinking of Franco and Bolo as two separate names. However, if you run them together, you get the word Francobolo, which in Italian means postage stamp.
Holy ransom!
Exactly, old chum. When they had us glued to that deadly pasta press, General Gum gloated about our missing the greatest stamp crime in history. What could be greater than to kidnap the most valuable Italian postage stamp in the world, Franco Bolo himself?
Did Ralph get influenced by the coolest stamps on sale at the post office, or is it pure coincidence? Tell us at Stamps You're Here Today on Facebook or Stamps Show HT on Twitter, hashtag Stamp Stories, hashtag Garmy, G-A-R-M-Y.
Well, I think it's obvious because how can you, and I'm a big fan of Hollywood Babylon, but how can they not know that there was a big Batman stamp that came out? I'm sure they were. If they haven't gotten many sheets themselves, they know of it.
Well, Ralph Garn was at the dedication.
Oh.
Yeah, he was part of the FTC. Yeah.
Oh. They're pushing them hard at the post office because they ran out of Christmas stamps. But we got Batman!
Oh. Batman!
Batman!
Yes. Yeah, I saw my first Rudolph stamp the other day.
I've yet to see one of those.
Oh.
Batman, though. Batman.
I like which Cash, the abominable snowman. Yeah. Finally, he made it to a stamp.
Which, of course, Cash totally panned the bat symbol stamps.
Oh, the bat symbol stamps are stupid. Batman's cool. The little circle disc stamps are...
They don't look like stamps. I didn't...
Yeah. Well, that's what I was wondering is, you know, when I first got the sheet, I got a press sheet. And I was cutting them up. And somebody said, you know, take care to, you know, save these little dots on the side. If they hadn't said that,
you would have trashed
it. Probably would have thrown them away.
Forever.
Yeah, forever stamps, forever in trash.
They do that sometimes, though. I have a sheet. What was it? It was one of the first sheets I got. It was, a Pan American reissue.
Yeah.
And it's got these little diamond-shaped things on the side. Don't, and I was ready to punch the reissues out for grading. And Tom pointed out to me, no, those are stamps on the side, and those are really well centered. Wait,
well,
what?
When I went to the ASDA show, I was buying some postage stamps, and they came out with the Civil War stamps. And all their Civil War stamps were mispriced because there are two on the back.
Right.
That they didn't count. And these are people who work at the post office, and they weren't aware that there were two more stamps on the back of the sheet of the
But the bar scan should have caught that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that it would have, but putting out the
at the stamp show, they don't have the barcodes.
Exactly.
You mean they have to think?
So they were calculating.
Distinctly not allowed.
They were calculating price based on face.
Right,
it's like stamps, not 12 stamps.
Yeah. Okay. Oops.
Yep.
And they couldn't figure out why they had such a long line to buy those stamps.
Well, actually, I sort of ruined it for everybody because I pointed out to him I was one of the first customers. I don't know who else bought them. I go, there's two on the back.
Oh.
Pointing out that there were two on the back.
You have a knack for doing things like that.
I know, Captain Fairplay strikes again.
You're a spoiler. I didn't mean it in a bad way.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mean it in a good way.
So how collectible are Italian postage stamps?
Well, they issued some of the earliest stamps. And, you know, they also have Vatican States, Roman States. And they started, 1851, I believe? 1849?
No.
1847?
Italy was conquered by Garibaldi. Well, Italy was united under with Garibaldi's effort under Victor Emmanuel in 1870, 1869.
No.
I'm sorry. It was earlier than that. It was 1861, I believe it is.
For the Francobollo issue, the first issues?
The 15 Center, I think, came out in 1862.
I gave you a cover that.
No. That was Sardinia.
Oh, but that's still Italian colonies.
Right. It's Italian states. Yeah, there were several Italian states. And as a matter of fact, that's one thing that I wanted to bring up on the colors.
Yes.
When we had the color discussion, is that there are a huge range of colors in the stamps of Sardinia. And they have major catalog value. And one of the reasons people like stamps of Sardinia is because actually Sardinia became Italy. I mean, Sardinia was the king of Sardinia became the king of Italy.
Interesting.
So Sardinia engulfed everything else.
So in the old Ben-Hur movie, The Ten Commandments, when Nefertiti says they're amassing the Sardinian swordsmen, is that basically Italy?
Well, back then, I think that it's... Sardinia is the island.
Okay.
And during the Napoleonic War, it all fell to France. But Sardinia, stayed semi-autonomous, and then they jumped over and took Turin in that area on the peninsula again and had a relationship with France and then expanded. It's an interesting history of a interesting time period. Basically, it was a whole bunch of really dysfunctional little countries that were underneath bigger countries that really didn't like anybody.
So why did Sardinia, how did they get the name Sardinia? Because there's lots of sardines around the island?
Was their favorite dish?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah, I think that the island was first occupied by sardines.
Back in evolutionary days after the Big Bang. Yeah.
Actually,
back when the Alps dried up.
It's interesting because Sardinia was actually a Viking stronghold. And then when the Vikings all collapsed, they continued sort of their tradition. So actually, the hereditary Vikings or hereditary Sardinians are related to the Norse.
I am not looking for a Viking sardine, G. Clay, for you.
Oh, okay. Well,
it would make a set.
It is a great I've got on my wall here.
He's got his Viking chicken.
Viking chicken.
Oh, Bok-Thor. My God. What is it?
It's a Viking chicken.
Bok-Thor?
Bok-Thor.
Bok-Thor.
Pillager of Men.
Pluck-Thor. Pluck-Thor.
I told him I was going to find one. He didn't believe me.
Here. We'll
have to post
the mic.
We'll hold it up to the mic so everyone can see it.
Maybe put it on the page so everybody can see it.
Hold it up to the blog.
Yeah, there
it is. Okay, so the expert topic this week is airmail stamps and covers and everything else in between. So can people please define for new stamp collectors what qualifies as an airmail stamp?
Well, I think everybody knows what an airmail stamp is, but I the cool thing about airmail stamps, there's a couple of cool things. The first one is you have to really step back in time to the 1930s and the 1920s, when being able to fly was amazing to people. And they collected airmail stamps. They had albums for just airmail stamps.
Do you know what the first airmail stamp is?
You mean the first stamp with an airplane on it?
No, I didn't say airplane.
Oh, first airmail stamp then would
airmail be... airmail flight?
Would be the balloon stamps.
The Buffalo balloon stamp, yes. Yeah. Yes, you're correct.
Is that U.S.?
Yes.
Yeah. And then later on, you also have the... Well, Paris, France never issued a balloon stamp.
No, they had the balloon post.
They had balloon post, but no stamp for it.
And that was during the siege of Paris, so that they could get mail out. They flew it out by balloon.
Yep.
Many, many flights. The other thing that I really like, and I don't have the money to pursue, is pigeon mail.
Mm-hmm.
I've been given an item or two.
Yeah.
But there's so many different aspects of collecting airmails air posts or Zeppelins.
But to really appreciate it and appreciate why, like, the Zeppelins are so popular is you have to put yourself in the shoes of a guy from the 1930s or a girl from
I can agree with
that. A person from the 1930s, because it's like in the United States in the 1960s, everybody was enthralled with space.
So when was the first U.S. airmail stamp issued? May 1st, 1918. And it wasn't what they call C-1.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was actually C-3, the 24-cent biplane, the one that the C-3A comes from, the upside-down airmail.
Hmm.
It was 24 cents to mail a letter, not 6 cents. But they changed the rates, and the catalog did what they wanted to do, and they made C-3, C-1, per se, and vice versa.
And my favorite stamp, I believe it's the top right corner. It has selvage and a straight edge.
Okay.
That stamp only occurs from the first printing.
Well, you're referring to the 24 cent again.
The 24 cent.
And again, the first printing doesn't say top on it. It just has one plate number.
Yeah. So if you have a single plate and a straight edge at the right, it has to be from the first printing. After that, they had selvage on the right. Yeah. Strips, but they still had a straight edge on the bottom.
Plate strips of 20 sell for... approximately $15,000 to $20,000, as opposed to a double double plate number with the word top, which is in the $1,500 to $3,000 range. Yes,
I was going to say that sounds expensive.
Yeah, but it's cool because it's the first U.S. airmail stamp from the first printing. Back in the 1930s, airmail stamps were widely publicized. Widely sold. It exploded the stamp collecting market. And really, that's the reason why they were able to print Zeppelin stamps, is because everybody was so enthralled with air flight. And I'm sure that we'll get the same thing when they start carrying people into outer space.
Hopefully. Mm.
It'll be the same sort of excitement when people can fly into outer space. It'll be the same excitement as people felt when they first were flying in airplanes and able to move mail. And that's why airmail stamps did really boom. And today, why they're non-existent. Because everything moves by air now. We take it so much for granted that we don't even have airmail stamps anymore. We just have stamps.
It's not true. We do have airmail stamps.
No, when was the last
airmail stamp? They're still issuing them. They're still issuing them.
When? When was the last
airmail stamp? All the time. The last one was a $1.05 issue.
No. That wasn't an airmail stamp.
It is, too.
It doesn't say airmail.
Get the catalog. It has an airplane on it. All the airmail stamps currently.
No, but does it say airmail, and is it a C number?
Yes, they are C numbers. They have a silhouette of a jet on them.
A little silver jet, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, they're underneath my reference.
Thank goodness for airmail stamps. They're basically for international usage to Mexico and to Europe and to Asia. They can be used for first-class postage as well.
Yeah.
Well, the Global Forevers are kind of replacing the airmail stamps. That's what it feels like.
Well, when's
that way
the
they
last
can charge more.
C stamp issued?
Not too long ago.
No,
it's $1.05.
2012.
So we skipped 2014.
What is it, C-151?
The 2014 has 2012.
What is it, C-151?
Which is the $1.05.
Yeah, C-151 is it?
150.
150, okay. I'm anticipating the next one.
Yeah, okay.
When the next rate change comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but they all have a silhouette of a jet on them, and they're mostly of National Park series. Mm. They're beautiful.
Well, we're just kind of speculating.
There's varieties to look for, too.
We're just speculating that at some point are they just going to kind of peter out, and that's what it feels like.
No.
It's been a year since they've released anything.
They petered out, I think, after C-118, and they said, no, we don't need any more airmail stamps. And then they continued releasing them for collectors. And then the so-called, well, they're for international use.
Yeah.
As long as the post office can upsell and still sell stamps, they will continue issuing them.
Of course.
Whether they're necessary per se as airplane. Yes, you are correct. Basically, everything goes by airplane and is eliminated, quote, airmail service, but yet.
Oh, if you send a letter from Los Angeles to San Diego, it goes by airplane.
Yeah, what they did is they basically eliminated the red, white, and blue diamond checked envelopes, which indicated that it was airmail usage. And basically you had to use one of those envelopes so that it was easily seen or understood that it was airmail purpose.
Oh, that was the point. Okay. I know those are a pain in the neck to identify some of them.
Based upon the diamond, which way they're going and the
pattern. What color is in the top right corner. And
very good. You guys impress me all the time, especially
yeah, those
especially
things
your,
are a pain.
Your knowledge, Tom. You have come miles and miles since I've known you in the last couple of years.
Yay. Well, thank you.
I actually was still receiving airmail letters from my people I met on my travels up until high school.
Mm-hmm.
So 2001.
It's interesting to see the flow of material that has come through PSE, how much knowledge you guys have ascertained from just the sheer handling of things or having to investigate or learn, what is this? Okay, and,
yep.
And it's provoked your interest.
We were talking about that earlier today, that makes it where somebody, I can't remember who, I was talking to somebody at Orco Expo, and they said that it seems like the way that it works out is when you first find out about stamps and you like them, first you start as an enthusiast. Then you move from an enthusiast to a collector. Then from a collector to a philatelist. And then from a philatelist to an expert. Well, we get to kind of skip a step if we want to, the collector step, because we see thousands of stamps a month and rare stuff. I've probably held, we were just talking about this, I've probably held more Pan American inverts than... You know, 30-40% of the people in the room at Orco Expo. Not that I own any, but just because they come in all the time and we see them constantly.
I have seen there's probably about 10 U.S. stamps that I haven't seen.
I'm
held in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a factor of the business. Yeah, but it is cool.
Yeah, I've even asked to see them when you get them, but you guys keep me out of the loop.
Oh, yeah. Well, we do it on purpose.
You can't even breathe on those stamps too hard.
Oh, nope. Yeah.
Shifty well, so gum.
It's like the other day someone sent in an invert. It's a 296A.
Yep.
Turned out it was a 296SA.
SA, specimen overprint? Yes.
Yep.
With the over,
still
with
valuable.
The over, with the overprint removed.
No,
I would rather
not.
Have it as as issued or things like that, because whenever they alter a rare stamp,
yeah.
Now you have something that you'd have to compromise to put in your collection, but you've ruined something that was naturally rare to begin with.
Yep.
That's unfortunate. Don't mess with your stamps. Leave them as they are. That's the way they were intended.
I have a U.S. number 154 30-cent banknote.
So do I.
Mint, no gum.
Oh.
And somebody tried to put a grill on the back of
fake
it.
Fake grill.
And so they took a $2,700 stamp to try to make it into a, well, I forget what
30,000.
Well, I think it's more like 20.
Yeah.
20,000. But they, then at the end of the day, what they really did was they ruined a $2,700 stamp.
Yeah. Now,
that's big money.
Most people wouldn't want it at any price.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a space filler. Well, no, but is it a fake space filler or is it a real space filler? Well, it's a real unfortunate item.
Yep.
Please leave your stamps alone. Don't mess with them. Leave them as they are.
Well, I think it goes without saying, don't try to fake them.
Don't try to enhance them, make them what they're not.
Do you guys have any first flight covers that come to mind? I heard a story about a plane going the wrong way, mm-hmm. full of covers. What was that story?
There was a very early flight, and I believe it was still in the 1918 period. And they took off the wrong direction. And they took off the wrong direction and crashed.
What's his name, Feldman?
No. And then so they put all the covers back on a truck, brought them back to Washington, D.C., and the next day flew out the correct direction.
So are they listed as crash covers?
No, but you can tell the date on them. They didn't stamp them as crash.
It's unfortunate.
And it wasn't like a crash, like a burning, fiery crash. It was just, you know, the guy had to put down in some wheat field or something like that.
Okay.
But there was a wrong way. And then, of course, you have wrong way Corrigan, who was the very famous.
Feldman. Corrigan.
Corrigan. Oh, wrong man. Way Corrigan. Let's see, what other first flights? I had some Lindbergh ones.
Feldman was off of Gilligan's Island.
Oh, okay.
That's where I picked it up. they used the Corrigan thing but changed the name to protect the victim.
So they didn't have to pay any royalties or something?
There we go.
When Lindbergh finished his flight, he was contacted by, I forget the guy's name, but Trippi is the one who came after him. Who headed up Pan American Airlines. And he flew from Puerto Rico to Florida, jumping to Haiti, Dominican Republic, and Cuba, and then up to Florida. And he flew it on the Spirit of St. Louis. And it's the last flight of the Spirit of St. Louis. When it landed in Florida, they put it on a train and shipped it up to the Smithsonian. But that's a first flight cover for
Contract Airmail?
5, I believe it is, or something. It was a very, very early, way before the CAMs. But it turned into CAM 5 or something like that. And it's a rather popular topic. There's a lot of first flight. But, you know, during that time period, like I said, during the 1920s, everybody was fascinated with flight. So every single flight that went out someplace was a historic event.
It was?
Well, and commercial airline pilots back then, you were like gods.
Oh, yeah.
So what's a crash cover?
A crash cover is where an airplane ceases to be an airplane. And
becomes junk.
It turns into junk, yeah.
No, it does its best impression of a groundhog?
During the early days. That's why they had the... you could only fly so far. You couldn't fly at night. Airplanes got lost all the time. They had the beacon in C-11 shows the beacon, which is in Cheyenne, Wyoming, I believe it is.
Oh, that's what that is.
And the beacon is there so that air mail pilots can sort of have something to see from a long way away. Because I guess you could see it for several hundred miles or something. So you knew to aim for that.
Well, that was all the days before radar.
Yeah, yeah, they had no radar. They had altimeters, like looking over the side and going, yeah, that ground is pretty far away. I'm probably fine still. You know, there's no, I'm not crashing into a mountain, so there's a big plus. But the they crashed all the time. Weather, malfunctions, everything.
But crash covers are usually, they're rescued covers or bags of mail from the crash site. They're usually rubber stamped or from the postmaster wherever they were recovered and said, we apologize for the inconvenience and please accept our apology. This was crash mail, you know, but highly sought after because it's a limited edition.
Well, you see the ones in the Hindenburg go for thousands of
it
all. Yeah.
I was going
to
say that's my favorite airmail cover was technically a last day cover the Hindenburg. Those are expensive. Yeah. Yes. But talk about neat history.
The more burnt they are, the more desirable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The most valuable one that I saw in an auction was half there.
Yeah, which half?
Oh, well, that's like what is the right half of the stamp? Yeah,
off the subject, but you have Titanic covers because people kind of don't realize that the Titanic, when it floated out, it made a stop before it headed across.
Southampton.
So you had a bunch of mail coming off the Titanic, at, I think it was Southampton. And you have a bunch of postcards and stuff, and they all went through the mail. So you have mail from the Titanic on its maiden voyage.
That didn't get wet.
They didn't get wet yet.
But highly sought after also.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In fact, my sister just told me that she saw the exhibit at Knott's Berry Farm. They have actual piece of the hull on display that you can physically touch.
Yeah, my kids want to go see that.
Is it? It's actually at Knott's?
Yeah.
That's very far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have my kid says, oh, they dragged up like half the Titanic. And you go, no, they didn't. They dragged up like some crates of stuff. But they have a bunch of Titanic items there, including a full set of dishware with silverware.
Oh.
Oh, sounds like we gotta go to Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah, I'm. That's one of the things I'm most fascinated by the Titanic, and I don't know why.
Do we get royalties from Knott's Berry Farm? No.
Sure, why not? I will give you a check for $1 next week. Okay.
Have we ever gotten a donation for giving somebody a plug or anything?
Shout outs.
Yeah, shout outs.
Shout out.
We got a really nice room to record in at the last stamp show we were at.
Oh, that's right.
A good point. That's a good point. Yeah, there's the payoff. There's payoff.
Exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And my sign became infamous.
Oh, yes.
My sign has its own business card now. And as I put out, it's so successful, it's going out on the road, literally.
There you go. Well, I want to try to bring it to Riverside if we can, please.
Oh, I'll think about it. I have to ask the sign. It's taking a break right now.
Oh, okay. I want to get a small one to put on our table.
Oh, yes, yeah. A miniature.
A miniature sign. I want it to Perfect. Be like a folding sign and everything.
Ah, how cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vintage baby signs.
Baby yep. signs.
Sign Here's your baby sign.
Cool.
You have a topic down here, forgotten varieties.
Yeah, you know.
I forgot all about those.
Yeah, if we forgot them, how are we going to...
Unlisted stuff.
Well, there's like a landing plane.
What?
Oh, my grounded plane?
Those aren't...
Grounded
plane.
Those aren't forgotten.
Those aren't forgotten at all. People look for those all the time. Fast plane where the... we're talking about the C3s where the center blue... plane.
The vignette.
If the propeller is into the red of the frame at the left, it's a fast plane. If the wheel is into the red on the bottom, then it's a landed plane.
Grounded plane. Various stages of or different degrees of the shifts. And, of course, the extreme shifts are more valuable than the slight shifts, but some people collect them in progression of flying and or landing.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite's a C-11 open door variety that I think Tom or Scott, one of the two of them, taught me about a long time ago. And I have a lot of fun going to dealer tables, going through, going, hey, you got a variety there. Didn't you know that?
Keep an eye out. Keep an eye out. I found one on a plate block once.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. What caused it? Because it's not a plate variety. I think it's an inking variety, right?
You need to talk to Ron Couchot from San Diego who exhibits the stamp. I'm not an expert on it. I didn't even know that. The beacon was in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I've seen that Cheyenne, Wyoming for years and years, but never occurred to me that's where the beacon was till this broadcast. So I learn every day myself, and it's always interesting.
Steve, I've been with you for a long time, and I've noticed that you've been getting better and better, and I want to compliment you. It's probably from hanging out with me.
Wow.
No. Oh, boy.
Let me pat you on the back.
Well, I looked at that variety very closely, and what it appears to me is it occurs in the doorway of the beacon. Where it's supposed to be solid ink.
You mean the shack.
The little shack, that's right. And it's supposed to be solid with two microscopic thin lines that run through it that are supposed to be part of the scaffold for the beacon itself. Well, it looks like it would be an inking variety where ink did not get between the two micro lines from the scaffolding. So you have ink from the door, then a blank spot where those two lines are supposed to be, and then more ink for the door. So, but yeah, it's just fun to point out. I pointed that out to three different dealers so far. They didn't know what that was.
Makes it look like the door to the shack is open.
Yep.
Well, another airplane is the aviation stamp, the 5-cent aviation stamp with the, what is it, the groundhog or the gopher?
Oh, you're talking about number 650, 650, the 5-cent blue aeronautics
Does it have a gopher on the ring?
Or a groundhog,
yeah.
On the top of the Earth, or the globe, there's a little bump or whatever, and they call it the groundhog variety.
Groundhog, okay.
Yeah, which
oh,
is
I thought it was
neat.
On the wing.
No, it's no. actually on the Earth itself.
Oh.
I think Brian's found those before a couple times.
Oh, okay.
And these aren't listed anywhere officially. It's just
no,
by
that,
word of
groundhog is listed in
that
Scott
one is listed,
lights.
Yeah.
It is.
They actually have a picture of it in the catalog.
The open door variety, I believe, is not listed.
No, I've never found it in Scott.
It exists.
It's not in
if,
there.
I think if you go into one of the, I don't think it's the error catalog, okay. but one of the catalogs
I believe,
does talk about the open door, but it's not in the Scots.
I believe it's because it's not what they call a constant, which is meaning that it's in the same position all the time.
It's too random.
It's random. And that's why I can say keep an eye out because I have found a plate block with it in it. Not
okay.
every stamp either. It's yeah. just like one stamp mm-hmm. of the plate block.
I see what you mean where the groundhog looks like it's on the Earth. It's kind of sticking out of the wing on the Earth.
Prairie dog.
Okay,
plate flaw, prairie dog.
Prairie dog, groundhog.
Oh, and then that's why that one's listed because that's a plate flaw.
Yeah.
It's a plate flaw.
So it's consistent. Okay.
Yeah.
Worth $27.50 mint and $12.50 used.
And I've never handled
versus
one.
$1.10 for the regular stamp.
Highly undervalued. Something to look for. And is it a certain plate position?
Yeah, it's position 50. So it's the
lower right corner.
Right corner. Yeah. So
plate position is it a certain plate? So it could
yeah,
be
19,
yeah.
1958.
Lower left pane.
But those are
lower left pane of 50. So it has selvage and a straight edge. It would have lower.
Yeah,
left.
You're right.
It would have selvage on the bottom and straight edge on the right.
Yep.
So there's how to find it.
So
lower right corner.
And if it's only that one position out of an entire sheet, that's a 1
in
200.
It's probably been reperfed so many times.
That's like a 1. That's like 1 in 200.
Yeah.
It was thrown away. Used on covers and thrown away because people back then didn't care about straight
edges.
That's
a spec. Yep.
But that's not actually an airmail stamp either.
C3A catalogs $450,000.
$1341, the dollar airlift stamp is not an airmail stamp.
Which?
That's true.
The dollar airlift, which was to help ship packages from Vietnam to the States.
Hmm. Well, the 50 and the 60 cent,
I know which ones you're talking, Cochrane and
Wiley Post.
Oh, C95 and 96?
No,
I know which one you're talking about. 3066 is one. Cochrane. They were commemoratives.
Yeah.
1341. 30,
there it
there
is. Yeah, there it is.
And that's what, 3050, I think?
3066.
3066, okay.
50 cent airplane stamp, not an airmail stamp.
But that one you look for the black missing. We have found several sheets of the black missing on that.
Black engraving.
We had 12 sheets come into the store one day.
Wow.
Yeah, we controlled that one.
Oh.
Certain dealer. So we had 600 examples of the black missing.
And then I was I saw the double impression on the Lindbergh stamp.
Oh, one of the most remarkable errors of all time surfaced a few years ago, which was the Lindbergh stamp with double impression. And it wasn't just, a double impression. It was a dramatic drop.
Yeah, it was double strike. I mean, it wasn't like a blurry impression or something. This stamp went...
No doubt about it.
It got hit twice.
And the unusual thing is that it came from a pane of 50 from a sheet of 200. And the thing is, it's the only one that's ever been found, and it was underneath another stamp in a collection that was purchased in England, from what I understand from Tom of H.R. Harmer.
Oh, yeah, he's the one who sold it.
Yep, and it brought, what, $15,000?
Well, they listed for $16,500 here. So.
Okay, so $16,500. Oh, with the buyer's premium or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, with the tip.
But It's stunning. Also listed in the Scott's catalog, illustrated.
Then there is one other variety. It's in the forgery section. They have a forged Zepp stamp.
Oh, yeah, the 260.
Yeah.
I would note the thing that I've only ever found once or twice. Actually, I had 10 copies. No, 10, 6 copies. It's the C7 has a extra line in the tail.
The double transfer on the tail?
Yeah. I've only ever had 6 of them in 44 years of dealing stamps. Highly unusual. It's a constant in one position. For me to find 6 in one lot was someone knew what they were doing. Someone probably broke them off sheets in the 30s or 40s and saved them. Have you ever found one?
I have never seen one. Yeah.
Okay.
I collect number 11s, though. They'd have all sorts of double transfers. And
not C11s with double transfers.
Not C11s, no.
Other than that, there's not too many varieties.
No.
But we have C46, the Chiang Mai Pink. You weren't here in that conversation.
No, I wasn't.
We should bring this up in February.
Okay, fine.
In February.
The only other real, I think, varieties you really have consistently throughout the mid-range airmails is the tagged versus untagged.
And wet versus dries.
C67, which Jeff
mentioned. Yeah, but that really wasn't a variety.
It was actually the first of the tagged airmails, and highly undervalued. They only catalog it, I think, for $4.50. I've had one sheet, and it was many, many years ago. Very difficult.
The C23, the color variety.
Oh, ultramarine versus...
Oh, Scott's blue. So happy he found a top plate strip of 10.
That actually is...
That actually
violet C23C.
Yes, it's a C23C.
Actually, the ultramarine more looks like violet than it does blue. I mean, it has a violet.
Yeah, it has a cast to it.
A little bit.
Cast.
I was told the easiest way to tell the difference between the regular and the variety of that one is to look in the lines of the shield at the top center of the stamp. That in the normal one, they're bright enough where they kind of pop and they're very thick. You can tell this without even having to put it under a loop. On the variety, they're very thin and pale in comparison.
Don't know about that.
And so it just looks kind of blah, like a boring version of it. And they don't pop out at all.
Well, when he brought this one in, because it was just on a page in the collection. So the person didn't know they had it. You know, it's like, cool. Hey, look at this. My $10 item is actually a $1,500 item.
Jeez.
Do you have samples here?
Yeah, it's real quick and dirty because I was looking for one for a long time. And so I brought it up to him and he said to just look at the shield. Once you if you can see a reference and a regular side by side, you'll know instantly, okay, that's what the shield's supposed to look like for the variety.
Oh, here's an interesting one is the moon landing stamp with the...
the red litho omitted.
The red litho.
C76, the patch.
We've gotten sheets of them where one or two of this... This is just something for expertizing for people out there. The red has to be totally gone.
100%
gone. 100%. So this sheet we had, the upper left-hand corner, it was mostly missing. Out of a sheet of 50, one stamp had it omitted.
That's correct.
A bunch of them had it mostly omitted.
But it still shows dots.
Mostly omitted isn't the stamp.
Correct.
Well, and the big key on that one to me is it's not just the patch on the arm. That's gone the most. It's in the yellow lunar lander is where there's also a lot of red litho. And that's oftentimes where you'll find the dots of red. So people say, ooh, the patch is missing from the arm. It's gone.
Do you know?
But if you look in the lunar lander under, like a 10 power loop or something, you can still see those dots of red. So it may have missed the arm, but it still has the dots, and that's not omitted.
Okay.
And people just, so you know, the lunar lander has little red dots for like shading.
They're just shading dots.
It's just shading dots, but those have to be gone also.
Yeah, so any trace of the red at all does not get a color omitted call.
Mm-hmm.
And do you also know that the Gemini Space Twin Stamps 1331 and 2 has the same variety? There is a patch missing.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Also
that's
listed.
Funny.
The way it was put to me is...
one stamp in a sheet. I've only owned it once.
Well, I know what Jeff's about to say. I'll let him say it, but it actually goes not just for that particular stamp. It goes for all of them.
Yeah.
Any error, all the color has to be gone.
Any color omitted variety, when you're looking, it's an analogy of you can't be a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't.
That's correct.
So if there is one microscopic dot of that color or tagging ink or whatever it is that you're trying to hope for is missing, you are out of luck.
I was a little pregnant once.
That was just gas.
Oh.
There's our joke. Did you write it down?
Okay, is it C3A time?
Almost. Well, I have a little quandary for you guys.
Speaking of airmails?
Yes.
Yes.
Somebody won a C3A uninverted inverted Jenny. Someone from, I believe it was Georgia, who bought one, what was it, a quarter?
One per quarter.
From the online.
So that'd be four a year.
It's not something, we'll go over it quickly. It's not something that...
I think we should, this deserves a much longer part in another podcast, but basically the post office clearly did not put all 100 out there into the world.
And they did not state that up front. He goes in, we're looking at an article, and he goes into describing what they did, because I think people caught on real quick that this was a bad thing, and they had to suddenly realize, wait a minute, we better explain this.
Yeah, supposedly a person who had been buying stamps was randomly selected out of all the people who were randomly buying stamps. And they said, here, take one of these that we've only printed 100 of, which are supposed to all be out there in the wild. But we know we have
this. We don't know where they are.
We don't know where they are, except that we do. And here. And it was like, oh, hold on there. What's going on?
I figured
was
out.
Was he a stamp collector?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I figured out the logical quandary behind this. It finally made sense to me. So what they claimed is that he had purchased these in the past. Well, mm-hmm. The only way they can keep track of a purchaser is if you did it through the fulfillment center.
Correct.
The only way you can get stamps to the fulfillment center is to buy something, to provide them with a reason to ship something to you. Therefore, okay, fine, they saved out a couple of the sheets so that they could use them for giveaway purposes, et cetera, et cetera. That's a little shady, but the reason I figured out why it kind of pisses me off going through the underlying stuff is it went from a free giveaway to a true lottery without regulation, because that meant it was purchase necessary to enter.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, you are absolutely correct. I have a funny feeling that somebody at the post office said, you know, these are not selling. Let's get them into the news that somebody finds one. How do we do it? Well, let's give one randomly away to somebody. And somebody thought, hey, this is a fantastic idea, without like talking to people who were actually in the hobby, because they would have said, what are you, crazy? These are all supposed to be out there in the wild. You can't admit that you're holding some back.
And they admitted that it's more than one, too, in this article, that it's an undisclosed number that they held back.
Yeah.
So how many is undisclosed? Are there 50 out there? 60? Probably. Where are the rest?
Well, how many have you guys authenticated?
Well,
or that you're in knowledge of being out there? 28?
21.
21 is the count right now.
Yeah.
21 that you have officially authenticated?
Oh, no. Have seen 7. I think we're 7.
I think that's the number, I think, through Lynn's from the post office.
Yeah.
But I've heard as many as 28. Did that include the 5 or so that were found at the APS convention in Connecticut?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Wow.
Well, the guy bought out the post office for $620,000.
No.
That wasn't
He didn't find 5. He found 3.
Oh. So he did not win on that. Okay, let's move on.
Actually, he did, because the odds are that he was going to get 2, plus a 50-50 chance that he'd get the 3rd if he went straight. I mean, there was a possibility he'd get 0, and there was a possibility he could get 80 of them, but...
I think we should start a petition that they lottery off the balance of them like they did with Legends of the West, so everyone has a fair chance.
No.
Continue to buy them the way they're going?
Continue to go and just say, we're sorry, we held some back, we have now put them into the wild also.
Oh, because I just spent a large amount of money with the post office through the Kansas City Fulfillment Center. I didn't order any. I should have.
Well, you know how many...
Maybe you'd have gotten one for
you
free,
know
too.
How many were issued.
One.
You know
I'm
how many...
order again.
You know how many were issued, 100. You know how many sheets were printed. You know the odds. All of a sudden, you don't know the odds.
Right.
And, you know, if they held out 20 of them, that affects the odds greatly.
Plus the value.
Plus the value, yeah, what's going to happen.
Who gets those?
Well, and they were truly not put into circulation because the guy who said it said he got it in the original packaging.
Yeah.
The packaging supposedly was marked. They claim this in the article, and the guy actually sent all of the photocopies of this stuff all to Linz so that Linz could look it over. He sent him scans. And it was specifically marked on the outside with a big red congratulations written on it.
Ah.
So that they knew that that's what it was.
Well, here's mine. Are we ready to open this?
Right. Here we go.
This one did not.
This is a winner.
Yeah.
It doesn't say congratulations on the outside. Wouldn't it be funny if?
I bought this one normal. They didn't send it to me.
But if
anything,
it said congratulations on the outside, then they know exactly where all of them are.
Did you buy it at the post office?
Actually, this was through the fulfillment center.
Which means that there's no purpose to buy them if they're labeled on the outside of the envelope.
And it's a normal.
Next time.
Next time. Next week.
Darn it, it's inverted.
But it's well-centered, which is rare.
And there probably has double transfers all over it.
Bye, Cash. Time for Cash to go. As he casually leaves.
Casually?
I've always wanted to do that.
Okay, on that note, you can email us at stamshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stamshowht, Facebook at stamshowheretoday, and our website, www.stamshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. And on that note, keep collecting.
This is Wayne Youngblood with Regency Superior Auctions, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
I'm Brian Metz with OCStampStore.com with your stamp tip of the week. When you're looking at your 10-cent 1851 to 59 issue, look at the right side of the stamp. Do you see three pearls at the lower right? If you do, then it is probably type 1 through type 4. If you do not, then you can quickly eliminate it as type 5, a Scott number 35. For more U.S. stamp tips, sign up for my newsletter at OCStampStore.com.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today. To send up, address unknown, no such person.